What happens when you take the youngest Fortune 500 department head, make him a business advisor, train him to be a stand-up comedian, give him a microphone, and send him out on the road? You get Garrison Wynn. Garrison has been a professional public speaker and advisor for more than 20 years, giving keynote addresses to American Express, Wells Fargo, NASA, Verizon Wireless, even the US Navy, and that's a fraction of the list. He perfectly blends content and comedy to create compelling speeches that inspire leadership, communication, persuasion, and so much more. We talked about his book, The Real Truth About Success, and how anyone can become successful by playing to their strengths and taking advantage of the situations and opportunities that are right in front of them. Not only did I learn tons during this conversation, I also laughed more than I have in a long time. So if you are ready for a hilarious conversation about how to master public speaking and play to your strengths, then you are in the right place. So strap in and get ready. Hello, everyone. Today, we welcome to the show Mr. Garrison Wynn. He is a Fortune 500 leader, a business advisor, speaker, and professional stand-up comedian. His keynotes fuse comic timing and research to deliver motivational business expertise. For the last 20 years, he has given keynote presentations to key clients such as American Express, Wells Fargo, Oracle, NASA, and many, many more. He is the author of the Amazon bestseller, The Real Truth About Success, and The Cowbell Principle, and he has also been a weekly contributor to The Washington Post, Forbes, and Inc. magazine. He went on to become one of the youngest department heads in a Fortune 500 company, where he researched and designed processes for 38 company locations nationwide and developed and marketed products that are still being sold in 30 countries around the world, and he has taken his time to be with us today. Thank you for joining us, Garrison.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So for some of our folks who absolutely have no idea who you are, why don't you tell them a bit about yourself and what you do?
Well, I speak at conventions for a living. And so what that means is that, you know, every organization, association, they have an annual event where they bring in all their people, fly them into a hotel, could be in Cancun, could be in Chicago, and they bring in speakers. And I'm one of those speakers. And my topic is influence and how that relates to change management, leadership, sales, safety. Pretty much how to get people to do what you want them to do. That's the topic. And I do anywhere from 78 to 110 events a year. It's my 21st year doing it. So.
And how did you find this crazy passion in speaking on stage?
Just lack of other skills, lack of other. Well, what happened was I originally was in business, and then I went to a comedy club to do like for an open mic, and I was earning a living in 9 months. Not common, very lucky. So I did that pro stand for 5-6 years, went into corporate America, and then got lucky because my boss screwed up and I got his job. So I was like a 27-year-old with like, you know, 71 corporate direct reports, 38 satellite locations. So I got kind of lucky and learned some stuff, and that's kind of what happened. And then after that, I got tired of making other people rich. I got tired of that and started my own company in 1995. And I've been speaking at conventions, doing consulting, writing books ever since.
Fantastic. Now, do you have a favorite aspect about being on stage?
I like the audience. I mean, I just get a lot of charge from the audience. I like doing it. I work harder than I have to these days. I mean, I love doing it. If I'm not in front of an audience with, you know, like in a 10, 15, 20 day period, I get pretty weirded out. So I do a lot of gigs. I just like doing it. And I like the connection and I like making people laugh, but I like helping people. So
yep. Fantastic. And do you have a favorite keynote that you get to deliver?
I have a flagship keynote, and it's called The Real Truth About Success, Changing Markets, Changing Times. And it's a lot about what the most successful people specifically do and how they remain flexible and deal with situations when they change. Everything's going to change. Are we flexible enough to kind of deal with that? So that's kind of my favorite. It is a flagship. I have different versions of that as well. So,
gotcha. Fantastic. Now, if someone wanted to – they're preparing for a public speaking appearance, what would be some of the major things that they should focus on for that?
Well, number one is to be prepared. If you are prepared and you know exactly pretty much what you're going to do, you're not nearly as freaked out or worried. You're less likely to got to panic. That is for sure. But the other thing is, you know, to make sure that your overall topic is big and strong enough. In other words, if you're getting from an audience and they're all leaders, make sure that the audience knows we're talking about leadership. Maybe it's your own spin or it's disruption or moving change or whatever it is. But having that big umbrella topic and stating that up front makes a huge difference. So I think setting it up where it's easy right up front, you know, easy for the audience to grasp, makes a big difference.
Gotcha. Now, for someone who might have a little bit of nerves before going on stage, what might you give someone for advice right before they step out on there?
Nobody in that audience wants you to fail. There's not a people in the back going, I hope this guy sucks. No, nobody says that. Nobody, not really. You know, okay, there's one guy. But you got 1,000 people, one guy wants you to suck. But most of the time, I mean, in reality, people want you to succeed. So the audience is always on your side. Number two, be who you are. I mean, the worst thing you can do is be fake or phony or false. I mean, that's just terrible. So people will allow you, you know, to be yourself. And they appreciate it. You don't have to be the super smooth and polished. You have to be organized and know what you're talking about and be cohesive. But I think we worry too much about trying to be the speaker or trying to or think about how people view us personally. They don't know who the hell you are. They just know what you're saying. You know, they saw your bio or they read your book and you showed up and you gave a talk. Just be who. The worst thing you can do is to not be you. Yeah.
That's fantastic advice. Yeah. Now, a lot of your speeches, you mix those big topics with comedy. So how do you walk that line between being too much of a jokester but also having enough to keep your audience engaged?
That's a very good question, and it can be tough. The thing is, since I was a pro stand-up, I've got the ability to get big house laughs, so I can bust up the room continually. And that sounds like a great advantage. It is, but you have to understand why are you there in the conference call that I have every time before I speak. What are they looking for? What is the main goal? I have a lot of things, but Garrison, you know, the topic is leadership, but for God's sakes, be funny. And we saw you speak in Atlanta last year. That's why we brought you into San Diego. Make the point, but be funny. So they're really heavy on that. And sometimes like, hey, Garrison, listen, it's a big change management thing. We want you to be entertaining and humorous, but make sure you drive these points, and it might be heavier points. Now, I find out if things are super, super heavy, for God's sakes, be funny. You know, that just makes sense. But it is a bit of a balancing act. But here's an example. You always want to make sure that you never do anything that's funny that is not based on a point. So an example would be, you know, multiple solutions for a single problem is key. If you're going to be influential, you can't be stuck with one idea. People think you have no depth. So the people the most influential have multiple solutions for a single problem. When I think about multiple solutions for a single problem, there's a lady down in Florida, and she's a living embodiment of multiple solutions for a single problem because she's a veterinarian and a taxidermist, okay? And her motto is either way, you're getting your dog back. Either way. So okay, funny joke, but the thing is I had a reason to tell it because I told a story. And then I can make the point afterwards and say, you know, the reality of it is if people believe that you're just stuck with one idea, they have a tendency not to want to do what you say. They have a tendency to kind of fight you and say, hey, wait a second, it can't be just that. So what I just did was I told a story. I made a point. Okay. I told the story or the joke and then made a point. So it's point, story, point.
It's a sandwich right there.
It is a sandwich, a speaking sandwich. Yes,
absolutely. And then it's just not a joke. It comes within the context. So that's what keeps it in line.
No gratuitous humor. When you just start telling jokes, number one, are you a humorist? Is that the goal? If not, then people don't understand. So yeah, absolutely.
Gotcha. Now, do you still get nervous at all before you go up on stage?
I'm nervous every time, every single time. But the thing about it is you take that nervousness and you flip it into energy. Nervous inside, energy outside. So imagine you're nervous insides. That sounds ridiculous. Imagine you're horrible, gelatin-like nervous insides. You get on a stage and pow, you just push. Now, I've been doing this a long time. So my nervousness is just a natural nervousness. It's not like I'm so afraid I'm going to fail because I have a history of not failing. So a lot of that's experience. The only way to be a good speaker is to speak. You can't practice in a mirror. You can't come up with great ideas. Hey, I got a bunch of great ideas. Okay, you have to actually speak. I am a good speaker because I have spoken often. So, yeah.
Now, do you have any pre-performance rituals, like right before you go on stage, to make sure that you're in that right mindset?
I drink a tea that's a combination of green tea and like ginkgo, I guess. And I'd like to say it helps me, but I think it's just a ritual just to drink the tea. The other thing is I have a tendency to look over notes at the last minute when I probably don't need to do that. It just makes me feel better. So that's kind of a last minute ritual. And sometimes I probably need to be alone for like 5 minutes. Every now and then you get ready to go up and somebody come, hey, oh, good to see you. Hey, I saw you talking Boston. He starts trying to talk to me, you know? So that can be kind of weird. So yeah, I've got to be alone, drink some tea, go over notes. Yeah.
There you go. So that, then you step up on stage and you're ready to go.
Yep.
Now, question. So what would you say are some of the top three skills that are needed to excel in today's workforce?
That's a very, very good question. And as simple as that question is, it's not asked enough, and especially as clearly as you asked it. I think really number one is being able to simplify things. People believe if you can't simplify your information, you don't understand it well enough yourself. And a lot of times these days, people are trying to sound smart, and they want people to impress people, and they're complicated. So it is a matter. I mean, you have to be personally influential in leadership, sales, service, technology. It is a very, very big. So clarity is king. Again, it doesn't matter how smart you are if no one knows what you are talking about. Right now, if you're not able to simplify, you don't have a lot of power. People start looking in another direction. So you got to be able to just explain the big picture. The other thing is, and not talked about enough these days, is organizational skills. I mean, you have to be able to explain to someone and to demonstrate what a good job looks like when it's finished, not the steps to get there. What can you show or explain to someone? What does success look like? And do you know what success looks like? If you don't know it, if you haven't defined what success is going to be when you're finished, it's really hard to get there and do a good job. So I think that's the key to organizational skills. I think also we need to understand the history and the origin of things better. A lot of people actually are experts in the field, but don't know what came before it. And it's always easy for older people to tell younger people, I don't know history, you know, because if you're under 30, apparently they didn't teach history. But whatever it was, I'm not sure what they didn't teach you. But knowing where something came from is a really important thing. It's huge. The last thing, connected to that, a lot of times these days people know trial and error. If I bring in somebody, a younger person, help me with technology, they're going to go trial and error. I would be very concerned about not being able to teach something because you just do trial and error. People are going to think you're not organized, and maybe you're not. I mean, if your mode of operation is trial and error, what do you really know? I think that's the concern. So I think organizational skills are key. And the last thing is a tough one. It's a skill, but it's also a philosophy. You have to do very little of what you do badly and a lot of what you do well. If you do nothing but focus on your weaknesses, you're going to feel weak. There's no doubt about it. It's kind of like the number one rule of marketing. Go where people suck. Go in a market where people suck and be good. I don't want to be competitive. I don't want to be in a fair fight. Hell, I could lose a fair fight. I want a fight I can win. So you want to set yourself up to where you're focusing on doing the things that you do well. In other words, if you have talent, get better at that. I'm successful because I was already naturally pretty good at being funny, and I naturally like being in front of an audience. I took those things I was naturally good at and practiced them until I became great. I didn't say, hey, wow, I suck at this. Let me try to get better for 10 years. That's a terrible, horrible idea. So definitely want to work on your strengths, not so much on your weaknesses, for sure.
I really like those aspects. I think they're a little bit different than what most people say, but you really hit on some great truths there. I especially like what you said about the organizational skills and defining success.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's people breeze over it. They ask for – they want to be at the end goal, but they don't know what
right.
The end goal is.
That's exactly right. I need to finish, but I don't know what I'm doing is what they say. I got to finish this, but I don't know what it looks like.
Now, to backtrack just a little bit with your speaking – as well, when it comes to body language and choreographing your movements on stage, how could someone take those basics and making yourself more approachable or likable non-verbally?
Well, here's the thing. They talk a lot about that these days. Sometimes our body language and the way that we move around may not match how we think or feel. Or a lot of times we project a certain image, you know, what we say, but the truth is we think and feel a certain way that affects our body language. So it can be pretty complicated. But like an FBI guy told me, we used to believe that body language meant something, and it usually has to do with your origin issues in your family. Maybe you copied, it's possible to copy the body language of a parent and not really think what that parent thought. You just copied their body language. So my point is that it can betray you because it doesn't necessarily. Now, what's also important about that is there are some basic things. And one of the basic things is that when you meet somebody, just relax. A lot of times we get really eager and anxious. I had a guy come up to me one time and he literally stepped in between my legs to shake my hand. So when the guy was shaking my hand, he pretty much put his groin into my groin, which is kind of he meant well, but it's like, I don't know where you're from, but where I'm from, we don't shake hands as our chests are touching. It's just a weird, that's a weird thing. I also had a guy one time that just, he was visibly shaking. He was excited, but he was like shaking. It's kind of an odd thing. Another thing I saw a guy do one time was he just was like kept scratching his head. He was nervous and scratching his head. So there are certain things you just watch out for. And if you know someone really well, you have a good relationship, your spouse or your friend or your girlfriend or boyfriend, ask them, is there a trait? Is there something that I do continually? Like, no matter where I am, do I have this thing that I do? Because I think somebody, the guy that shook hands with people, his idea of shaking hands was more of a body hug than a handshake. Yeah, that was his deal. So the other thing is understand that how important body language is. This is not just screwing around. There's a really unpopular experiment that was done, and this is controversial. These days, you talk about bullying. All that. People are getting bullied, right? Well, about 25 years ago, they did an experiment. They took these kids out of one school and moved them across the country to another school and found out they were bullied again in the same way within months. So it turns out the number one cause of bullying are the bullied. That people who carry themselves like they have low self-esteem, people who carry themselves in a way make themselves a target, and you can actually attract bullies. No one wants to hear that. We want to blame the bullies, and I'm not saying the bullies aren't at fault. I'm saying that if you don't, like sharks, don't get in a tank wearing a meat suit. How about that?
Exactly.
Just don't set yourself up. So,
and it's such a light bulb moment when somebody realizes if you stand up straight and keep your head up and
right.
Project that positive body language, people perceive that instantly with confidence and competence.
When you're on stage, it's called presence. I mean, are you standing up there? Are you confident? Are you talking to the audience like they're humans and you're a human, you're there, they're your friends and you know them and you trust them. It's an interesting thing. When you have presence and many people think, oh, this guy really believes in himself, and that may be very true, but it's that you trust the audience and they sense you trust them. If you want to have influence, let people know you trust them for sure.
I think you hit a really awesome topic when you said talking about a presence.
Oh, yeah.
And how you can convey that, whether you're on stage or whether you walk into the boardroom or whether you're negotiating, having that presence is something that people look at and they go, how or what or how does that happen?
Well, one of the things, by the way, is belief system. You have to believe that you should be there. And this is a tough one. So when I walk out on stage, I believe I should be on stage. I'll be honest with you. I believe I should be there. I've seen some people get on stage and start to thank everybody. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. And you realize after a couple minutes, they don't believe they deserve to be there. One thing that's hard to get through people's heads who are amateur speakers is you can get up there and say, thanks for having me. But after you thank the third or fourth person that allowed you to be on stage, the audience thinks that maybe somebody else should be on stage. this person, did you win the lottery? Were they drawing straws? How'd you get this gig? That's the problem.
Yeah, get up there and share your piece now that you've got the spotlight.
Right. You have to believe it. You have to own it. Your belief system creates not only your experience, but the experience people have who are dealing with you. So,
gotcha. Now, I'd like to talk about your book a little bit. The Real Truth About Success. And I know, like you said, that's your favorite keynote. If you could give a little bit of an overview of what's inside that book for us.
Well, what we did is we interviewed 5,371 top performers over about 10 years. And we asked questions. What we found out was that they had the same old answers. We said, wait a second. If you're the number one in the world, how come your answer is the same as the person who's not very good? I worked hard. I did this. No. So no offense, but whatever, that's not it. So started to ask, okay, beyond all this stuff, all the answers you give, is there something that you don't talk? Is there something beyond that? So when we told people we didn't like their answers, we got more interesting answers. Now, I'm sure we got some help from Gallup on that too. They helped us. I'm sure a lot of people go, wait a second, you really led the witness. I mean, like, what kind of research is that? Well, I don't know about that, okay? All I'm saying is the answers we got were extremely interesting. And we found out that what the most successful people had in common was they took advantage of their advantages. They figured out where they had the most advantage and they capitalized on it. That was a very interesting, simple thing. So we looked at that. We also found the concept of they were not in a fair fight. They set themselves up in lopsided battles they could win. They were successful, not because they were in an even fair fight, but they set themselves up where they had an advantage because they took advantage of their advantages when others around them did not. That's what we found out. Very interesting. And so the book takes you on a journey to take kind of a self-discovery journey about looking at yourself, about, hey, what are the reoccurring patterns and traits that I have that would allow me to be successful? So different from one of my favorite books, First Break All the Rules, which is based on the Gallup survey of 1 million employees and 80,000 managers, and I love that book. This really was very much personal about what people were specifically doing. And for his example, there was a guy who weighed 400 pounds, and he was 6'6", and he was really successful because he goes, everybody remembers me. I'm the biggest person that's ever been in their office. And when I go to these conventions, I wear these big red and bright shirts, and people see me, and I'm the most well-known person. He was like the top-selling person in the concrete business, and everybody knew this guy was really successful, and a young guy, very successful. His brother felt he couldn't be successful because he was too big. Yeah. Very interesting. Got a twin brother, looks just like him, believes that he can't get ahead in life. His brother makes money because nobody can forget how big this guy is.
Right.
It was very interesting about how people just took advantage of the advantage. Another example is a lady who was a top real estate salesperson. Her husband was CEO of a company and had all these lists of people who moved from location to location. She one day said, is there any way to get these lists? And she did. Hired four other backup realtors and had real estate license in 10 states and became the number one realtor ever because she was willing to ask for the list. It wasn't proprietary. It wasn't illegal, but people thought it was not okay to ask for it. So she just did. She took advantage of her advantage. So we saw a lot of that. And in the end, what the book comes down to is, what are you willing to do? I mean, why not you? Why would somebody else be successful, not you? Why would you be sitting there watching some successful person go, wow, how did they do that? Well, they're not any better than you. The average IQ for an executive is 105, 110. I mean, it's not about brilliance or genius. It's kind of like the geniuses work for the action takers. We found that the people who are just willing to go out and do things were by far the most successful, and they just simply were willing to take advantage of an advantage. Anyway, that's kind of the book in a nutshell. But made it funny, made it a quick read. I wrote it at like seventh or eighth grade level. So yeah, you can't not get it.
Very nice. I'm going to add that to my reading list.
Sounds
fascinating. And I think, I mean, what you hit on there of playing to your strengths and taking advantage, right, that's something that we do with our coaching a lot, is because,
right,
just like you said, you can be the smartest person in the room, but if you don't know how to convey that to other people, communicate effectively, put that,
right,
spotlight on you, you're going to stay right where you are at that level.
Yeah, it really is. It's almost shocking that we found that how many people were extremely bright and knowledgeable, and they worked for people who had nowhere near their knowledge or experience or intelligence. And the reason they weren't the boss is the boss took actions, took risks, made decisions, and the boss believed that they should be in that role. Interesting.
Yep. They went out and they executed it.
The three traits we found of the most successful people were, number one, they believed they deserved to win. Why not me? Number two, they had a little bit of inferiority complex. They believed whatever they did wasn't really always good enough, so it fueled constant improvement, right?
Yeah.
And number three, they knew when to go and when to stay. They knew they were willing to sacrifice today for tomorrow. And those three traits aren't always common, but when you have those in one person, they're almost always successful.
That's awesome. Now, I know that you're a big inspiration to a lot of people, but who would you say is an inspiration to you?
Well, this is interesting. I could say my mom and my dad. I had really interesting parents, you know, that said interesting things. You know, my My dad always said you can stand on your head and stack greased BBs if you have to. I've never seen a greased BB. I'm sure in the 50s that was funny or something. I don't know. But my dad's what a guy that just he just almost never came across something he couldn't do. Interesting. His story's interesting. He retired. He was a CEO of People's Gas Systems and did a lot of interesting things in his life. He also had to go out and find a job at the age of 50 years old when his career took it. So I saw him do that. And my mom was one of those people that she just believed that you could fix anything. There was anything that couldn't be fixed. Sometimes she did that with mask and tape and, you know, whatever, you know. But she just believed that everything could be repaired. There was no such thing as something beyond repair. And I think that meant a lot to me. But also I have to say, and I'm the only person that ever says this, I can guarantee you that, my ex-wife, believed in me to no end. And we still work together. She works for my company. And by the way, you have to have really good relationships if your ex-wife works for your company, by the way.
Absolutely.
Just because we couldn't live in the same house and make our relationship work has nothing to do with how we feel about each other. And she's one of the people that helped me and believed in me. And the best thing we ever did was get divorced. So now we really get along extremely well. So we're in the same house. We're good. But I say that because, you know, people forget sometimes the people that really meant a lot to them. And my ex-wife has really been supportive of me 100% and still is today. So I think those are the three biggest people that were close to me. I didn't necessarily look up at successful people I didn't know as mentors so much. I was in a situation, I think, that I didn't see a lot of people doing what I wanted to do. So I kind of carved my own way a bit. Looking back, I think people have helped me since I've gotten at a certain level, though, for sure.
Gotcha. Now, on the family note, I saw on your website a little story about traveling around and with baseball and Hank Aaron. And
yeah, so my dad worked for Magnavox, and they invented the world's first video game. Well, the story is I took the demo before it was a video game to show and tell at age 10 years old. That means I demoed a video game in fifth grade in 1970. And no one had ever seen it. My dad said 400 people called the house that week. Like, what was that? It was a video game. So the game came out, and I got to travel with my dad when I was like 12, 13 years old. And Hank Aaron, who had in 1974 broke Babe Ruth's home run record. Yeah. So we hired Hank and demoed the Odyssey video game. Why it's Hank Aaron, I don't know. But that's what happened. So I got to go around with baseball legend at 13 years old and demo video games. So I get on these radio shows and Skype shows and shows like this all the time because I'm somehow the father of video games. I didn't know what it was. My dad said, hey, I brought this thing home. Don't take it to school. So I immediately took it to school and demoed. That's what happened. So I was demoing video games before anybody knew what they were. So.
Absolutely. And I can tell just from your stories that you pull a lot from your real life and your past. And that's what
right.
That's what it correlates to your on stage performance, and you're bringing that authenticity, you're bringing those stories, and that's what people want to see, and how you can tie stories into those keynotes.
Absolutely.
Gotcha. Now, a couple things to wrap up here. Now, do you have any books that you recommend?
I mentioned First Break All the Rules. Originally, it was by Marcus Buckingham, who was at Gallup at the time. I know he's no longer with Gallup, and somehow they attribute the book to somebody else. I don't know how that works at Gallup. We partner kind of with Gallup, whatever. It's called First Break All the Rules. It is the only truly foundational leadership customer service book that was based on the research. They interviewed, I think it was 80,000 managers and 1 million employees over 25 years. If you don't read that book, then other books aren't going to help you enough. Read that book. It's foundational. Came out in 2002, inspired me to start with my research that I've done over the years. Yeah, it's a great book. Read it first, for sure.
Fantastic. Absolutely. Now, if someone wants to learn a little bit more about you or potentially book you for a gig and see a little bit more about Garrison Wind, how can they do so?
They can just Google Garrison Wind. Just go to Google and just type in Garrison Wind. All my stuff shows up. You can go to garrisonwind.com. That's garrisonwind.com, and go to my website. You can also find me on Twitter and Facebook and all that good stuff. So.
Gotcha. Now, another fun one. If you could have a conversation with anyone, past, present, or future, who might that be?
That's a really interesting question. I didn't know both of my grandfathers at all.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my grandfather, my dad's side, died the year I was born. and mother grandfather before. I don't know. I think I would like to talk to them and just to find out, because I just don't have a sense of who they are and kind of like the origins of where I came from. We have a big family. We can I can track my family history back on both sides. One to the year 1077 on my mother's side.
Whoa.
Yeah. I got an ancestor that was with William the Conqueror, for crying out loud. The thing is, the last name Bedingfield, and they lived in the province of Bedingfield and didn't move for, you know, 1,000 years. So that helped. On my mother's side back to my dad's side, I mean, back to like 13th century, 12th century. I don't know. I just would like to know at least grandfather, just figure out where I came from. The other person I would like to talk to is maybe Warren Buffett. And I'll tell you why. Buffett says some very interesting things, but it's what Buffett doesn't say that interests me. I've heard some conversations like, he's leaving that part out. I'd like to know what that part is. So, yeah. I think those are the two grandfathers and Buffett, if that makes sense.
Those are fantastic answers. Yeah. Now, last question here. I'll hand the ball back over to you. Is there anything that you wish that I had asked, or any final words of wisdom?
Yeah, and it's a bit of a touchy subject. It's about people confusing their opinions with facts. These days, I'm surprised at people who think their opinions are facts. You know, I heard I'm not a very political person, or political discussion, and this person says, but we live in a democracy. No, we live in a republic, and it's different. I mean, it's similar, but it's different. And the person said, I don't believe that. Well, if you don't believe the facts, I can't. It's not my opinion. You know? So I think we need to make sure that we don't. I was talking to people who believe that because they believe something, that makes it true. We have a lot of evidence. There's a lot of history on things. I think it's really important to study and get the facts, and it might help you to base your opinion on something. I was on a radio show years ago, and a lady called in. It was really strange because she was just making stuff up, I guess, but she was this big authority. And, I mean, she just got torn apart on the radio show because basically it was just all opinion. She was a smart lady who explained things very, very well. We actually have facts. You can go read and study stuff. So, and the other thing is don't let the media tell you who you are. You know, good news does not sell newspapers or cable subscriptions. There's no money in it. So, of course, the news is bad. It's going to be bad. If you were on the internet and you saw a link that said life is good, life is great, would you click that link? No. If it said headless body found in topless bar, click, that's news, right? You can't sell Prozac and LifeLock and beer with good news. So, yeah, just the news is bad. That's what it is. And after, 1998, you're under entertainment law, so you don't have to tell the truth. So when they say there's 700 murders in Chicago and that's a record, no, it was 1,100 in 1993 and 945 in 2000. So the truth is, it's actually getting better. Life is pretty good. It's just not that terrible. Crime has gone down. A lot of things are better. So don't let the media tell you what life looks like. You decide what your life looks like. Important.
I think you nailed it with that as well, because when you talk about perspective and creating your own bubble, yeah, your own path moving forward,
right,
you've got to consume what you want to consume,
right,
make your own opinions, and go from there.
That's exactly right. Yeah, exactly right. And like I say, there's a lot of information out there that we know. So look at that first. And then when you have that opinion, it's based on something. I think that's really, it's a good lesson for people today.
Absolutely. I love that. Yeah. We'll leave that as our wise words for everyone to the end there. And once again, I really appreciate your time. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
I'm going to have a heck of a time writing a description for this, because we covered all different topics here, but it was a bit wonderful.
Well, I appreciate it. And thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Have a great night, Garrison.
Thank you. You too.
And that's a wrap. What'd you think? Let us know the favorite thing that you learned or your favorite joke that Garrison told in the comments below. And if you know someone that has an upcoming public speaking appearance, go ahead and send them this video. It's got lots of tips, and I'm sure that they will definitely appreciate it. Below, I've included the links to Garrison's website, some of his prior video clips so you can check out a bit of what he does, and of course, the books that he recommended while we were speaking. So if there's something that we talked about and you need to know where to find it, it's all right below in the description. I've made it super easy for you. As always, click subscribe right down there in the corner. We don't want you to miss a single video. And remember, every Wednesday, we're going to be releasing brand new interviews with industry experts and influencers, body language coaches, public speakers, comedians, and so much more. I promise that you will not want to miss it. And always, check us out on the web, www.lifessecretsauce.com. Until next time, ciao for now.